Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey y'all, welcome back to a Friday, June 17th, 2022 edition here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. We got a three-parter on today's edition of the program. Part one with The Athletic's Jovan Bua, talk all things NBA, Lakers. We talk about Russell Westbrook, Darvin Ham becoming the new head coach there, the Christian Wood trade to the Mavs, what the Jazz are going to do between Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, who their next coach is going to be, and then a little NBA final stuff. But ultimately, a lot of fun talking with Jovan, the old friend, an OG here on the Chase Thomas Podcast here on the Blue Wire Pod Network. Go check out all the other great programs all across the Blue Wire Pod Network if you have not already done so. Just all kinds of great stuff. The Long Shot with Duncan Robinson, we got Green Light with Chris Long, we've got Insight with Chris Van Fleet, Spencer's with Haley O'Shaughnessy and Jordan Liggins. Just a very strong collection of talent over here at bluewirepods.com. so go check all those out today and all of our great pods across our network if you've not already done so. What about Tennessee basketball? That you can go check out on sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Yeah, a lot of fun previewing the guards and the nice mix that Tennessee has going into next season, and why, even though two talented four stars are coming in the building, like, they're not even expected to or need to contribute right away because of the depth and versatility that Rick Barnes is going to be able to utilize early on in Knoxville. So you can read that over at sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. Go subscribe there, tweet at me at @chase_thomas, like the Facebook page at facebook.com/chasethomaswriter, email the program at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. again, this is a three-parter, so all three parts will be right here on the Chase Thomas Podcast feed, whether you listen via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or however you get it. Guess what, you can check it out right here. Check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/chasethomaspodcast. like and subscribe and check out our stuff there. All kinds of great video content over on our YouTube page, so make sure you're checking all that good stuff out. All right, part one with Jovan Bua of The Athletic coming up in just 1 second. Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to the Chase Thomas Podcast, taping this on a Thursday afternoon, a couple hours before Golden State and Boston go to Game 6 here in Boston. Who is not in Boston is Jovan Bua. He covers a team that I think a lot of folks do not want to see come back and win the final two games in the NBA Finals against the Golden State Warriors. But Jovan, you're here. You've killed yet another LA team when you switched over the beats. Who's next on your list?
I don't know what it is. This like toxicity follows me around wherever I cover. I go to the defending champion Lakers, and they have two disappointing seasons. So, and look like they might have a third. So we'll see. But yeah, I guess I'm bad luck.
I don't know, man. Like, have you, so you're on vacation, you're getting time away. I like it. But you do have, I just imagine that like you've gotten some texts where you've gotten somebody been like, hey, did you hear Andy Davis hasn't picked up a basketball and like since the season ended? What's going on? Is it like code red when they said that? Because I could not believe that was a story, because for a lot of folks who have kept up with the Anthony Davis thing, I think you and I talked about this, where he did not get to do his normal several month off away from basketball following the bubble season. And that was really, really hard on him. And that's like his way of recharging. So it didn't surprise me that he said that. But a lot of people were pretty, pretty bewildered at Anthony Davis not going anywhere near basketball postseason.
Yeah. And we also don't know. I don't know if it has officially come out like when that was even filmed.
Yeah.
So that could have been true. May 7th. And he's saying, you know, they're like, when was the last time you touched basketball? He's like, oh, it's been over a month. Like, and obviously he didn't say that, but like, I think just because when it was released, you know, it's 2 months later, doesn't mean that that's when those things are filmed. Like oftentimes those vlog type things are at least a week old or so.
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, whoever's putting them out. So I would say we never got confirmation on when that was actually recorded. And, who knows? Maybe it was within the last, you know, week and a half. But I think it was a complete overreaction. AD has been public about, you know, he'll take 4 to 6 weeks, not even touch a basketball, not even do anything, just kind of let his body recover. And if anybody needs recovery, it's Anthony Davis.
Yes.
Kind of the way, the fragility of his body. And then he'll start to weightlift again and kind of ramp it up and then get back into shooting. So is it maybe on the longer end of most stars? Yes. You know, I would say, yeah. Like, you know, I'm sure there are people who might take a few weeks off and then get back to at least shooting. And maybe they're not going to go, you know, full on scrimmaging, full on live action stuff. But it's at least like, hey, let me keep my jumper fine tuned and in a rhythm and some consistency there. And I do think Anthony Davis needs some of that, where, you know, he's coming off the last two seasons combined shooting 22.9% on threes, which is really, really bad. And coming off that stretch in the bubble where he was at almost 40%, like the Lakers need, especially if they're going to make this Russell Westbrook thing work or try to make it work, you're going to need better shooting from Anthony Davis. So I do think that, you know, the next 2-3 months, he's going to really need to be in the gym and focusing on his shot and catch and shoot and even some pull-up stuff, some off the dribble stuff. Like I think he's capable of that. He's shown he's capable of that. That, you know, guys taking, you know, I've talked to several players this offseason and they all took at least a month off and before they even got back in the gym. So I don't think that that's crazy. And again, someone like AD who has dealt with so many injuries, like he needs to be careful, and like, you know, you don't want him getting injured in the off season, right? So that would be a disaster heading into the year. So I think, but there's also, it shows like this is kind of the dead time of the sports cycle. Aside from the playoffs, there isn't really much to talk about. So I think people are looking for anything to overreact to.
Yeah. I mean, that is a lot of it. And I don't know, man, since 2020, the bubble season to now, I think a lot of players are just gassed mentally. And I think finally getting a normal off season away from everything, and it seems like next year's NBA season should be pretty normal 2019 levels. So, hey, if you want to take some time, Anthony Davis is going to be fine with or without. He'll be fine. Like, that's something I would not worry about, is how often he's picking up a basketball this summer. But well-to-do rest, and I think a lot of dudes need to like mentally recharge and get ready. So in terms of the Lakers, though, they hired a coach, Darvin Ham, Jovan. My immediate reaction was just that, like, I mean, that's fine. It's not really a coaching thing where I think he'll be fine. Frank Vogel was fine. He won a championship. Frank Vogel is a very good basketball coach. I think Darvin Ham will be a very good basketball coach. But I think there's significantly more factors at play that are above him and whether or not he succeeds. So I don't know. Were you surprised ultimately that the Lakers went with him? Did you have any inclination that it was going to go a different way? Were you surprised that Howard was not seriously interested in leaving Michigan for the pros and coaching this team? What did you make of this coaching search?
Yeah, well, I think that the first thing was there really was no sexy name out there. Mm-hmm. And I know it came out that Juwan Howard was technically their top candidate, which the Lakers can't really help themselves of just not making the coach they hire feel great. It's always, you know, like they hire him and then it's like, hey, well, we wanted this other guy or these other couple guys. And it's
they
like,
all said no.
That's not the best way to start kind of a relationship with the coach. But, you know, I think what really was telling to me was like how far the Lakers have fallen, I think, reputation wise to some extent. Insofar as like, I think this situation of having, like, you go back like 10 years ago, and the whole Mike Brown situation and Mike D'Antoni and stuff, but Mike D'Antoni was a very, you know, attractive coach. Like he was someone who people want, like he was very highly regarded coming off that Phoenix situation. And I think like had we gone back 10 years in time, I think the Lakers would have had a shot to get a Doc Rivers, a Quinn Snyder, a Nick Nurse. Like they would have had their pick of, we're going to poach an elite coach in a situation in a smaller market or a situation where, you know, they might not be able to truly contend in the near future. And we can get basically, any, you know, aside from a Spoelstra, a Pop, like we can get basically any coach in the NBA. And that is no longer the case. And I thought the Quinn Snyder situation of him announcing he wasn't coming back to Utah like the day after the Lakers hired Darvin Ham, I thought was pretty interesting. And then, you know, them being tied. The Doc situation was a little bit more, I think, Philly, you know, I don't think they want to be paying multiple coaches. And I think that they're going to give him one more year or whatever. But you know, even Nick Nurse, like with the clutch ties, like I thought, you know, that is someone that really could be a game changer for you if you get a Nick Nurse. But that ultimately didn't happen. So I think once those names are off the table, looking at it, I did a coaching kind of big board tiered ranking. And I had Darvin Ham second. You know, I think that, again, kind of looking at the market, like Terry Stotts, is that really moving the needle?
Is he joining the staff?
No, he doesn't want to take on an assistant role. But like, you know, looking at some like Steve Clifford or even Kenny Atkinson, I think that would have maybe been my second choice after Darvin. It was close for me between Stotts and Atkinson. But Darvin, to me, was just someone who checked a lot of boxes. What, you know, 11-year assistant coach, someone who had already had ties with the Lakers a couple years as an assistant in L.A. That's where he got his start. And throughout his coaching career has gotten stars to really buy in and really like him. And I think that's something you really need. And I think that's something that, frankly, no pun intended, like, Frank Vogel didn't really have last season, and ultimately like the locker room kind of tuned him out. So I think Darvin, you know, worked with Kobe in LA, in Atlanta, Al Horford, Paul Millsap, you know, those guys. And then now in Milwaukee, of course, Giannis, like his track record is pretty impressive. And coming from the Bud coaching tree, which really comes from the Popovich coaching tree, like those coaches have a pretty impressive track record. And yes, there's some misses, but for the most part, like, you know, Quinn Snyder, Taylor Jenkins, like Bud, even Kenny Atkinson in Brooklyn, like those guys all had success in kind of their initial year entering a new situation. So, and also, I mean, I don't know if you saw the press conference, but Darvin is charismatic and charming. Yeah. And, but at the same time, he you can tell, like, he's a big dude and he's got this like toughness to him, where I think him maybe confronting Russell Westbrook or a player is going to be a little different than Frank Vogel, who's a little more mild mannered. So I think there's a lot, you know, he's got this gravitas to him, and just, you know, again, coming from the Bud system where Milwaukee's had a lot of success, Atlanta had a lot of success. I think, you know, he has the pedigree of an assistant coach who steps in and is successful. The question for me, of course, is, what happens with Russell Westbrook? Is he on this roster? And like, you know, how does that factor in? Because that to me really is the ceiling on this Lakers team. I still think that if you have LeBron and AD, if AD is AD and not the AD we've seen, you know, the last year and a half, that is two top 10 guys. And no matter how bad your supporting cast is, you have two top 10 guys, you have a chance against basically anybody. But Russ, I think, limits your ceiling on both ends. And limits your flexibility and kind of the pieces you can put around those guys. And I really think that if Russ is on this team, they're like a 6 or 7 seed. They're going to basically, you know, barely be making the playoffs or kind of be in that play-in mix. And that's another disaster kind of season where you're basically wasting one of LeBron's last prime years, you know, if he's still kind of technically in his prime. So to me, like, the Lakers have to do anything in their power to trade Russell Westbrook, attach a first round pick. I think maybe attaching two is too many, but I think you got to flip Russ for whatever you can get for him and really move on, because I think if he's on the roster, there's no sign to me that they can make this work.
Well, we'll hold the Westbrook thing, because we'll get into that a little bit more. I mean, he was at the press conference, so I think that signed, sealed, and delivered that he's back for next year. But it's also like, I mean, I'll hold the Westbrook thing for a second.
Okay.
I think part of what's interesting, too, and I want to get your perspective on this, is that, like, I think part of the reason, if you're Doc or you're Quinn or you're Nick Nurse, your current situation or where you could go is better than what the Lakers can offer. Where I think there's a possibility, and this is something I said a couple weeks ago on the pod, where I think there's a strong possibility LeBron's already played his last important NBA game. Like, I think there's a strong possibility as a main guy, a prime guy, I think he's played his last one, and that the bubble run we're going to look back on is like, oh, that was it. Like, he gave it his all in the bubble with AD, and now he's kind of stuck. And I think LeBron knows he's stuck, and that's why you're seeing I want to own the Las Vegas franchise team, and like, I'm a billionaire athlete now. He's now in that status now, and he's got a lot of focus on Bronny, and he's ready. He's just hanging out just to get there. Like, he just wants to be in the league when Bronny comes up and that kind of thing. But I think there's a strong possibility, because they're just, you talk about moving on from Westbrook, but when I look at the finals, and you talk about this, like, I said they were not going to be in the playoffs last year, and this was before the season and the tape show. I was like, I think what we've learned post bubble is that, I mean, look at Tatum in the finals. Like, he's out of gas, and I think it's going to come out that he's hurt and that he's been playing hurt in this finals.
The shoulder hasn't looked right. Yeah,
he's just not right. And the team that looks like, I mean, we're taping this before game six, the team that wins, the team that has 13 deep, the team that has just guy after guy, they have the young guys if they need to, they have the vets, they brought Iguodala back, the Porter signing, you have Kevon Looney, you go up and down the list so that if Steph doesn't hit a three all night, that you could still win, because they're just so deep, and the Warriors did not have that group together the majority of the season. They had to rely on different people to get to this point. I just don't think there's a scenario where the Lakers can build up enough depth to contend like they used to. Like, I don't think there's a path for them to get 9 to 10, 11 guys that Darvin can trust to get them there, so when AD sits for a while and he gets his rest, or LeBron has to get his rest, that, like, there's enough in the cavalry to keep this thing humming. I just don't see the path. I think they're kind of stuck. And I would guess that a lot of coaches around the league are like, look, we love LeBron and we love AD. We would love to coach them both in a vacuum. But this situation, I don't see how we navigate this cap situation, the roster situation, that we can get the depth necessary to contend over the course of a month and a half playoff stretch. I just think it's asking too much of AD and LeBron in 2023. Like, I don't think it's possible. What do you think? Am I too harsh or too difficult on them?
No, I think you're being pretty accurate. Like, I think this all, to me, stems from an overreaction to last season, the 2020-21 season, and them really thinking that they needed this, like, second ball, you know, elite star ball handler next to LeBron, because I don't think LeBron wanted to carry that offensive load anymore. But really, I mean, I come back to the Westbrook trade. The Westbrook trade, like, because even that second season of LeBron and AD, they start 21-6. They are in second in the West. AD goes down, gets injured. And then LeBron goes on this crazy tear where that's when he enters the MVP mix. And we're talking about, can LeBron win an MVP at like 36? Mm-hmm. And they were still top three in the West. And then LeBron sprains his ankle. Solomon Hill dives into it, and he, you know, collapses, and he's out for a bit. And now the Lakers don't have any stars, and you know, that's when they plunge from top three in the West to a play-in team, and you know, end up making the seventh seed. But they're up 2-1 on Phoenix in a 2-7 matchup, and AD goes down in Game Four, and you know, returns briefly in Game Six, but like, you know, can't really play, and that's the end of that series. But I think there was an overreaction to that team losing in the first round and kind of the context of the season, because I still think, like, if you kept that blueprint of the first 2 years of just, we're going to put these 3-and-D role players around LeBron and AD, and we're going to kind of have like two identities where we can go big with our centers, or we can go small with LeBron and AD at the 4-5. Like, we can kind of match up stylistically against anybody. And even a guy like Kuzma, who I think had always kind of been a little overrated because of just playing for the Lakers, like, he still served a valuable role of just being this giant forward who could defend multiple positions, shoot the three ball well, and like get out and transition. And
the Bobby Portis type role.
They consolidated their depth for a third star, which works if you get a third star, but they did not get the third star. So you now traded for a guy who's not playing at a third star level, and you also lost your depth. And that was clearly a big problem last year. And they could have partially solved that by keeping Alex Caruso, who I think would have, you know, would have been their third best player last year, you know, by a solid margin, but chose, you know, they could have kept Talen and Alex, gone deeper into the luxury tax, didn't do that. It basically became an either or, kept Talen, lost Alex. And that was a huge mistake. You know, Talen wasn't very good. Alex obviously continued to do what he did in Chicago, you know, aside from getting injured by Grayson Allen. And I think, you know, now they're kind of in this tough spot where Westbrook is declining and kind of in denial about it. He's not playing at a third star level, and you really have no way to get the depth that you're talking about. So I think the one possibility is if you can do a Indiana or Charlotte trade where you can get a Brogdon and a Buddy Hield, a Brogdon and a Miles Turner, or a Gordon Hayward and a PJ Washington, a Terry Rozier and a Kelly Oubre, you know, maybe even throw in a Mason Plumlee and kind of figure out the contracts there.
Can they afford that?
With Russ's salary. So
Monk was actually good for him last year. Like, they actually kind of need Monk back.
They could only use their taxpayer mid-level, which is about 6.3. I think he's going to get more than that, honestly. I think he's probably going to get the full mid-level of like 9-ish, 9.5. So I think Malik's probably gone. And I think if you're looking at them, if that's your one tool you can upgrade the roster with, like, based on the current construction, you have Russ in the backcourt, and now maybe here we're flipping him, but you have Russ, you have Talen, you have Austin Reeves, you have Kendrick Nunn coming back, who you spent the taxpayer on last summer. Yeah. So, like, you're kind of full in the backcourt with guys who expect to play and guys who can play, you know, to varying levels. You need front court help. I mean, your front court is barren. It's LeBron and AD, and then Wenyen Gabriel and Stanley Johnson. Like, you need a lot of front court help. So I do think that the Lakers are probably going to use that taxpayer mid-level exception on a 3-and-D wing, the best that they can get for, you know, that money, and or.
But who is that? Have you the
a stretch five?
It's bad, man.
It's bad. You know, honestly, like Daniel House or like Cody or Caleb Martin are like kind of realistic names I've heard that like, could be in the mix.
And
like
year. That's it's over. I'm writing it in.
Yeah. So I think if you can flip. To me, I love the Indiana trade, and that's one where, to me, like, you throw in the first, and honestly, you might even throw in two firsts, and I know that sounds a little crazy, but to me, it's like, what are you doing with LeBron and AD? Like, what's the point? Like, you know, unless you just care about being relevant, you know, being on First Take and you know, ticket sales and all that stuff, and that's fine if that's the approach you want to take. But, like, the Lakers are, you know, Rob Pelinka likes to remind us, like, for the Lakers, it's championship or bust. If you do not win the championship, the season is pointless. Like, there's no, they don't hang conference, you know, Western Conference Finals, you know, banners in Staples Center or Crypto.com Arena or their practice center. Like, it's all about championships for the Lakers, you know, right? Like, they're in this arms race with the Celtics for all time, you know, most championships. So to me, I'm like, if you have LeBron and AD and you have a, I think you have a championship 1-2, you obviously don't have a championship 3-10. You have to do everything you can to get that championship 3-10. And to me, if you can flip Russ for, again, Brogdon and Hield, Brogdon and Turner, Hield and Turner, something like that with Indiana, get that money off their cap and send them future picks, which could be valuable. I think you have to do that because now if you're saying, okay, like, I think the Lakers would love, like, Brogdon and Turner would make, you know, a lot of sense, right? That plugs your point guard and your center spot. But like, even if Brogdon and Hield, you get those two, and now all of a sudden, okay, like, sure, is it your ideal like third and fourth best player? Probably not, but it's better than Westbrook plus whoever else is their, you know, going to be their fourth best player. So I think now you still have that the taxpayer mid-level exception to use, and you add another rotation guy there. Now all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, maybe Stanley Johnson, Austin Reeves, young guys kind of improving. Like, those guys take mini steps. Kendrick Nunn is back. Talen maybe gets better as a shooter. Like, there's ways, I think, like, for them to kind of improve internally as well as the Russ trade. But that's kind of their path. Otherwise, I think if they keep Russ, this is a low-tier playoff team that's probably losing in round one. Maybe can pull off an upset with the right matchup and then lose in round two. But, like, you're not a contender. I mean, like, no. They're not a contender if they keep Russell Westbrook. They might not be even with if they trade him. But, like,
yeah,
I only you have see to do them something. Being yeah. a contender if they flip him. That's how I view it.
I mean, I'm so curious to see how Darvin constructs this roster and his lineups. But, I mean, especially if Westbrook comes back. But I don't know, man. Like, the Brogdon trade, like, I would probably do Hield Turner would probably be my comfort level just with the shooting, and you know what you get in Hield kind of filling the KCP role. Not the same defender, but Turner, you like the searchability with him, and he can go outside, and AD can do what he wants to do inside. And that seems more feasible to me, because think about Brogdon. I mean, he's so much fun to watch cutting and just finding his way inside, and he gets to the line, and that's all good. The injury stuff, I am not tying next season to Brogdon, AD, and LeBron's health. Like, that's just, those cannot be your three most important players, because the odds of all three remaining healthy for a deep playoff run is just unrealistic to me. So I feel like if you move Westbrook or whatever you do this offseason, you have to bring in a veteran guys that you know will be available come June, May, when you really need them, that they don't have that track record. And those kind of guys are in high demand right now, because everybody wants those guys, because I think everybody around the league now knows that depth is king. Like, even if you have a Jason Tatum or a Jaylen Brown, you need other guys. Like, you need other guys to get you through this gauntlet. Like, Steph Curry needs a Jordan Poole. Like, everybody needs additional help, even when you get the star. It's not just that, oh, do you have a star? Now we're contenders. Well, what's the rest of the roster look like? It's not the bubble season anymore. Like, we're in a point now where these guys are so taxed, and they're asked to do so much on both ends of the floor, and the game is so fast, and the seasons are so long, that I don't see it without significant depth and guys you can rely on. And I would just be very curious to see who they end up relying on if they do move Westbrook, because that's the one thing about Westbrook with that gamble that you could understand, is that he's going to play. Like, Westbrook's healthy, and that dude is going to play. So if he was going to be that third star, like, the man is a warrior. He is a physical warrior and was going to play. It's just not well.
See, okay, but my pushback on that is, like, because I've had it, you know, I've had a bunch of Westbrook stands in my mentions of, because I've been hammering, I've written a couple anti-Westbrook things of just, like, kind of similar to what I'm saying now. Like, I don't think they can contend if he's on the roster, and he lacks self-awareness, and I mean, it's funny, he's actually nicer to us off camera than he is on camera. Like, it's almost like, he'll kind of shoot the shit a little bit off camera, and you know, like, person to person, I have nothing against him as, like, a person, right? Like,
right.
You know, most people in the NBA, I don't have anything against them. It's just, it's his performance, and it's the fact that, you know, he takes bad shots, he doesn't finish well in the paint the way he used to, he turns the ball over a lot, and he doesn't really try defensively. Like, those are four, like, those are my four gripes with Russell Westbrook. And but
do you think he knows that, though? Do you think he knows?
No.
Like, those are true?
I think he knows it to some extent. Like, I think he's, you know, he's been a little self-critical, but he like, measures his success. I mean, he said in his exit interview, he was like, well, I didn't average a triple-double this year, so it wasn't a good year for me. And I was like, if that's your measure of, like, your success, like, you have, like, what about you, like, shooting a career or, like, second worst, you know, percentage at the rim of your career? Like, what about, you know, all your defensive metrics being just awful? Like, what about your true shooting percentage being awful? Like, I just, his 3-point percentage continuing to decline. Like, I just think with him and then there's the Westbrook stands and people saying, well, at least he's available. I'm like, yes, that is nice. Like, I'm, you know, you'd rather a guy be available than not be available. But it did not help the Lakers. Like, he had the worst plus minus on the team. And sure, I think to some extent, part of that was him being available hurt his plus minus because he was playing with so many bad lineups and stuff. But, like, I think the Lakers would have been better off, like, bench Russell Westbrook and give the keys to Malik Monk, you know, like give the keys to Talen Horton Tucker. Like let those, like let, they were more successful with the young guys than anything. Like let those guys run the show and they're going to have the basically the same results, if not a little better, in my opinion. So,
and it would have been easier think, like, if they just re-signed Caruso, like he's starting and then you have Caruso and Monk and then Westbrook off the bench. I don't know. I feel like it's a totally different vibe and a totally different situation.
And the Lakers, like in retrospect, kind of with how this all played out, like if you remember at the 2021 deadline, they had the trade that they weren't willing to do with Toronto, which was Talen, KCP, and a first for Kyle Lowry. Like now in retrospect, it's like you would have been way better off with that deal.
Yeah.
And having Kyle Lowry and then, and you know, who's not perfect. He comes with his flaws, but you saw in Miami, he can be a third guy on a team that makes the conference finals. And you know, someone who, I mean, much better than Westbrook, like on both ends. And then also you still would have, you know, you would have lost Talen and KCP, but you already lost KCP in the Westbrook deal. And, you know, Talen, I think didn't really help them last year. So, you probably would have kept Alex in that case. So now you still have Kuzma, now you have Kyle Lowry, you still have Alex Caruso. Like that team to me makes a lot more sense. You kind of, you know, revamp the center position and go from there. And like that team to me is still at least in the playoffs, if not kind of maybe fighting for home court and having a puncher's chance at winning a championship versus last year's team where they didn't make the play-in. It's like insane to me that the Western Conference favorite entering the season didn't even make the play-in tournament.
Yeah. Not my favorite. Not my favorite.
Not yours.
Jovan.
You called it. You called
it. Not my favorite. But we'll see what happens next year. We'll see. Last thing on the Lakers. Do you think Wall to LA is dead? Is that 100% dead?
I think so. I think it died at the trade deadline.
Okay.
You know, because Houston's wanted a first for him and the Lakers are basically like, we're giving you a better player, you know, for...
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't
think... Do we think he's a better player at this point?
No, I think John Wall's a better player.
Yeah.
But I think, like, the optics are, like, Russ is the better... Like, Russ is the bigger star. Russ is... I mean, like, his per game... Like, he still put up 18-7-7, but it was a very empty 18-7-7. And a lot of those numbers came with LeBron and AD being out. So, like, you got to remember that those two missed 60-plus combined games, and he still only put up 18-7-7. So, imagine, like...
What's the size difference?
Both healthy...
Well, what's the size difference? Not with those two. I was going to say the size difference between Drew and Westbrook, because that's the ultimate thing. If you're a Darvin Ham believer, you're like, maybe he can. He's spent so much time with Drew.
I think my problem with that though is like I feel like people are selling Drew short defensively of how like Drew's always been an all defense. Like
that's true.
I think maybe he's gone up to a different level in Milwaukee, but Drew's always been a really good defender. Russ is really
they're both 6'3".
Like you know.
Yeah,
I mean Drew's stockier. Drew's got like I feel like a stronger base.
I mean Westbrook's still strong. Like he's still
strong. But I think Drew. I just think Drew's strong. Like you know, I just think Drew's a different. I mean, you saw actually Russ was probably more effective last year guarding like small forwards than he was point guards. He's still like. I think the thing that maybe kind of irks me the most with the whole Westbrook situation and we were talking about like the self-awareness and what he's like like he said even in his exit interview he's like I sacrificed so much I did everything they asked of me and like I made all these changes and like that just was not true he had one game all season that he set more than four on-ball screens which was the third game of the season against Memphis and then he never did it again if you watch him off the ball, he was very just inattentive, kind of just standing in the corner or doing like whatever, like wasn't really engaged, setting screens, cutting, moving. And then defensively was completely apathetic. And like, you know, there was occasionally matchups or certain stretches of games where he would really lock in off the ball or on the ball, but navigating screens, you know, help side rotations, all that type of stuff was not the level that the Lakers needed. And it's like, it's not like he can say like he's 33 and like eight, like, yes, his athleticism has declined, but he's still a top 1 or 2% athlete in the NBA. Like, he's still a freak athlete who should be able to, you know, have the stamina, have, it's really an effort thing, in my opinion. So, like, I know for a fact he did not do everything the coaching staff asked him to do. And I mean, I don't even think you need to talk to the coaching staff to know that, but I have. And like, that fact is like, it's just him saying stuff like that. It just shows like, either he has no self-awareness or he just is blatantly like lying about, you know, the changes in his game, because he was basically the same player he's always been, just worse.
Go Lakers.
I drank an energy drink before this, so I'm revved up.
No, I'm saying like go Lakers. It's just bad. Like,
no,
it's
just no. I'm just. What kind of energy stuff drink gets me going?
I wouldn't have guessed you're an energy drink guy, because you're always at the cafe.
I'm not really. Yeah. I'm a big caffeine guy. Have you ever tried Ghost Energy?
I have not. Is that an LA thing or is that a national thing?
They make like protein products and stuff, but they've partnered with like Swedish Fish and the Sour Patch and different stuff. So like, I like the flavors. I'm not really an energy guy, but
yeah,
they, like,
same. They scare
usually
the
shit. I have a huge crash when I so like I like Red Bull or like sugar free Red Bull, but I try to not have it that often. But with this, like, it really does. Like, I would say it's the best energy drink I've ever tried, where, like, I don't really have a crash and it gets me focused. But it gets me a little too amped up when I'm talking about Russ.
There you go. I like it. Did you know, like, our, like, 3 or 4 year anniversary of us meeting in person happened a week or two ago? I got a Facebook memory.
It would have been my first year on the beat.
I think so.
So yeah, 2018, I would guess. God. 2018, 2019. Yeah.
Long.
It's crazy.
Just small world, but yeah, it's been a little bit since you popped into Atlanta. We had some good food, I seem to recall. In terms of Christian Wood, he gets traded to the Mavericks. Then you've got just Marquese Chris and just a couple guys that will not be factors in Houston going into next year. I think Boban, unfortunately, was included in that one.
Don't undersell Boban, okay?
How is Boban? Are you all still buddy-buddy? Like, well, you go on European vacations together? Like,
at the Hustle premiere at the beginning of the
month. Did you go to the Hustle premiere?
I did.
Okay, how was that?
It was fun. I had never been to a movie premiere before, and I wasn't like, you get invited and you're not really I didn't really know what to expect, and I didn't know if it was like, honestly,
didn't
you know
allowed to
it
just
was,
go
like,
up to Anthony Edwards
premiere.
Or Adam Sandler and be like, hey, athletic, yeah, Bambua, let's talk.
I didn't do that, but but like, yeah, I mean, all the NBA players from the movie were there. LeBron was there, Adam, of course, like, so Queen Latifah, like, you know, all the main principal figures from the movie were there, and then like Usher was there, like there was kind of some random celebrity sightings.
Okay.
But it was cool, and I don't know if you've seen the movie. I enjoyed it.
I have not yet. No,
I think it's like, for a sports movie, I think it's good, but I also think, like, just kind of, you know, sort of the inside basketball kind of elements of it are, you know, because they got, He's a Sixers employee, so like, they got really good access of like Sixers arena, Sixers practice facility, Sixers like gear. There's multiple Sixers players in it, and then, you know, there's a lot, like, Anthony Edwards doesn't play himself. There's a few guys who don't play themselves, but the funniest thing to me is that Juancho Hernan Gomez is like this like transcendent prospect that's just like hanging out in Spain, and like, no one knows who he is, but I thought, like, there was a lot of touches where I'm like, okay, like, that's actually accurate. And, like, I don't know if people know that that's accurate, but, like, this is kind of how some of this stuff works. And I thought, like, the inside basketball kind of elements of it were cool. But, I mean, sure, there's some cheesy, corny elements to it, too, as well. But I think you're going to get that always with a sports movie. But for a sports movie, I think it was pretty good.
Okay. Well, Christian Wood, though. Well, I figured he would get more than what the Rockets are able to get for him, but, I mean, it's an upgrade. They don't have to rely on Dwight Powell at the five anymore. That's good. He's better at, like, a 12 to 14-minute guy if you need him. He's kind of like that starter, the JaVale McGee-type role, where he's out there with the starters, and you roll with him for a little bit, and then you make the move, and you switch out going forward. And Christian Wood seems like he has a better chance of sticking in late-game situations than Dwight Powell. But, you know, the Mavericks are kind of stuck. Like, they don't have a lot of, like, the KP thing going sour kind of screws them. Like, that was where they were tying this early prime with Luka too. And that not going the way they wanted to, they're going to have to pay Jalen Brunson a lot of money to keep him around. And your core is Luka, Jalen, and Christian Wood for the next couple of years. And as we saw, I mean, Luka can take a team pretty far just on his own. But I don't know. Like, there's not much for me to say when it comes to Wood and this upgrade, because it is an upgrade. But I'm like, they went pretty far with Dwight Powell in that spot. And Christian Wood just... he's not an all-star, and he's not going to be somebody that gets them to that next level. They also don't really have a path to get to that next level, because they don't have the roster construction that will allow them to flip three or four guys for that next star, and they've never won in free agency. Like, that's that 2011 on, where they were like, oh, we'll keep the cap room, we'll be fine, we'll figure it out, and nobody ever came. And now... you know, you've got somebody who will probably be the best player in basketball in the next year or two, if he's not already there, and you're kind of stuck. Like, you're just kind of stuck. I don't know. I think the Mavs will be fine. They'll be good. They'll win a lot of basketball games, but I don't know. This is about the best they can do. What do you think?
Yeah, I was surprised, based on the asking price for Wood in the past, that, I mean, it was essentially the 26th pick in this year's draft for Christian Wood. But... I like it. I probably like it a little bit more for Dallas than you do, insofar as, like, I think one of their biggest issues in the playoffs was, aside from Luka and Jalen Brunson kind of doing their thing, they did not really have a reliable scorer inside the arc, and someone who, like, it was all basically Luka pick and roll, Jalen Brunson pick and roll, you know, drive and kick, drive and pull up, you know, drive and finish, whatever. But I think Christian Wood gives them, because even Maxey, for as good as he was, like, you know, he's primarily a spot up catch and shoot guy. Dwight Powell is offensive rebounder, roller, you know, can lob threat, but has to be set up. So I think Christian Wood is someone who can do that, is a really good diver and roller and lob threat. But he's also someone who can post up, face up, you know, slip screens, pick and pop, you know, pick and roll, but kind of roll into posting up a mismatch or something. So, like, I feel like he's someone that can score in that, like, 6 to 12 foot range that Dallas didn't really have, aside from maybe posting up Luka or posting up Jalen, and, you know, when he'll do that little fadeaway that he does. So... I like it. I like it offensively a lot for them. I think it makes their offense even more dynamic. And now they kind of have multiple looks they can throw at you at center, where they can go Wood, they can go Powell, they can go Kleba. Like, they can even go Dorian Finney-Smith, as we saw them go super small. Like, so I really like the versatility offensively. My biggest question is, can he defend at the highest level? And I don't want to spoil one of our final topics, but I think you've seen... with Golden State and Boston, that they these teams really don't have defensive weaknesses, you know, in their rotation. Like, and or if they do, they have ways to cover that up, and it's usually like the smaller, like, perimeter guys. But like Boston's entire rotation is, like, you know, 6'7" to 6'9", just giant athletes who can switch and are versatile. And then with Golden State, you know, their front court, Wiggins, Looney, Draymond, like, all those guys are plus defenders. And then even Steph, I think, is underrated defensively. But, like, Gary Payton, Clay, I think, has looked better progressively defensively throughout the playoffs. So, like, and that to me, I think, even going back to, like, the last few champions, you look at Toronto, that team was loaded defensively. The Lakers really didn't have a defensive weakness in their rotation. Milwaukee, kind of similar. So, like, we've seen how important defense is. And I don't know, like, Christian Wood is the type of guy who's going to be a 30 to 34 minute a night guy. But, you know, can he defend pick and rolls? Can he, you know, be a rim protector? Can he box out the, you know, some of these bigger guys at the highest level in the conference semifinals, conference finals, finals? Like, I don't know the answer to that. And if you are kind of building your construction of your roster of Luka, Jalen, Christian Wood, like, Jalen is a bit of a pit bull, but he also is undersized. Luka has his limitations defensively. Like, you kind of have your three best players are all like shaky defensively to some extent. So
yeah,
that's kind of a problem. Now, obviously, the rest of the guys, Reggie, Dorian, you know, like those guys, I think can make up for some of that. But you are kind of really going in on like offense over defense. And I think the league has kind of shifted more. You have to be elite defensively and just be able to score enough offensively.
I mean, yeah, the Hawks are going to be going through that this summer, trying to figure that out, because, I mean, building an elite defense around Trey is just difficult. Like, it's just going to continue to be difficult for the foreseeable future. Well, go to this. The Utah Jazz, Danny Ainge in the building. I think people have forgotten one thing I want to mention, the monstrosity that they've done to their uniforms next year. Like, I don't think people remember. Do you remember the black and neon green that they're doing? That they've added that to the... Jovan, people forgot that what's already happened. Here you go. So these neon green, black, and white uniforms are coming that were leaked a couple months back. And it's apparently... I remember at the time that leak was for next season. So unless things change, I don't know. These not a fan of these whatsoever. They have just identity.
So they basically copied the Hawks from like 2015 or whenever they had that
neon, the Volt Green, the Volt Green era.
Whenever.
Yeah, not great. Just I just don't understand, like, when you're a franchise and you have an amazing run of success with a certain kind of uniform, or it looks really good, just go back to that. Like, just do the 90s Jazz. I understand it's silly that you have Jazz behind in front of a whole mountain range in Salt Lake, but just do that. That's what people remember. Like, that's fine. Or just do the New Orleans Jazz kind of look. But like, what are we doing? Like, what is the Jazz logo? They had that red orange stuff for a little bit. Like, what is their identity? The Jazz have no identity.
I would say now this at least matches in that the Jazz was already like probably the least applicable like team name to that city.
Yeah.
I mean, like Lakers, like, you know, there's no lakes, but like obviously they were already an iconic franchise. They, you know, moved over from Minneapolis, but like for them, you know, now like I think the colors are kind of like that does not match Utah. I mean, at all, right? Like this neon green and black, like, you know, I think that's much more of an Atlanta, I feel like, colorway. Mm. Like, at least I actually like those uniforms. I was in the minority. Like, I thought Atlanta's jerseys were cool. But and also, like, they're super plain, you know, like at least Atlanta kind of had the different like diamond kind of, you know, pattern on their jerseys. Like, this is straight up black jersey, Utah and the number and like neon green, yellow, and then like neon green, yellow with black Jazz and number, and then it's just this is hideous. I don't know how I missed this, but
I'm telling you,
I wish you hadn't shown me this. You just ruined my day.
I'm sorry, Jovan, but
you ruined my entire vacation.
I didn't mean to do that, Jovan. I apologize. Well, I mean, yeah, that's just the whole thing. So we'll see if those end up being the final ones, but it seems like that's probably what's going to happen there. Mitchell, I think staying. Mitchell is part of this immediate core. Quinn Snyder out, we alluded to. They still don't have a head coach for next year. We don't really know what direction they're going to go in head coaching, in their head coaching search. And I wonder which comes first. This is, I think, the biggest thing, is I think no coach is touching this job until they collectively decide, Ainge and company, what they're doing with Mitchell and Gobert. Like, that's got to be decided before I'm taking that job or even having a sit down, because it's like, well, I don't even know what I'm walking into. Are we walking into a rebuilding project? Are we just going to double down with this core and you're expecting me to get this team back to title contention? Like, what? You have to figure this out before you do anything. So I think it seems like Mitchell's the one who stays and Gobert's gone. Gobert in Atlanta and Gobert in a Trey-led locker room scares me. That really scares me. I understand the defensive alignment and what that would do and that sort of thing, but I don't know, man. That scares me. But in terms of what the Jazz will do, what do you think they do? If they move Gobert, who is the right fit? Where did they go? And do you think that's the right guy to move? Or should they tear it all the way down?
I'm kind of leaning tear it all the way down. I don't know how good Donovan Mitchell is. And I don't want to, you know, I think sometimes we overcorrect when a player has a somewhat, I don't even want to say disappointing season, but kind of disappointing end to the season, and just kind of the way everything played out with Utah. I think there's a lot of Lob City with this group. And I think just the kind of collective, you know, if you remember with Lob City, like there's a lot of times the analytical models would be like, this is the best team in the West. And it was like San Antonio was still there. OKC was still there. And, you know, Golden State was there. But it was like, no. The Clippers, like on paper, have the most talent. Like they're the favorites. They statistically are the best team in the West. But it never materialized where they always lost, you know, due to injury or just due to blowing it, choking, whatever. And that's kind of been Utah the last 4 or 5 years where it's been, you know, and they've been the one seed a couple times, right? One or two times. But it's been Utah's the analytical model favorite. And like on paper, this is the best team in the league. This is the best team in the West. They should be in the finals. They should be the favorite. But it's never materialized in the postseason. And we've seen them always struggle on one end of the floor. Either they can't make shots or they can't defend, you know, a smaller group. And they've had their chances. They should have beat the Clippers last season. Honestly, they should have beat Dallas. I think, like, you know, given kind of the, you know, Luka missing the first couple games and just sort of looking at the route, like, you know, Utah, if they're as good as they've been made, you know, to seem, like, they should have won that series. And the fact that they didn't, like, I just think, yeah, I mean, I think you got to trade at least one of them. But I'm almost wondering, like, do you trade Donovan Mitchell? Because I feel like there's no assurance that he's going to be the, like, he wants to be there. I thought it was interesting his comments about the Quinn Snyder situation. You know, there's been a lot of smoke about him going to the Knicks and kind of just that whole kind of dynamic. I also think, again, like, I don't know how good is Donovan Mitchell good enough to be your, is he, can he be a Dwayne Wade in 2006? Like, I don't know. I kind of lean no.
Yeah.
So, you know, can he be your number two? Maybe. Can he be your number three? I think for sure. But like, you're not keeping him in Utah to be your number three because you're unless you're getting a high draft pick, you're probably not trading for, and you're definitely not signing someone better than Donovan Mitchell. So I just wonder if Utah, like, you know, and we saw Danny do something similar in Boston where, you know, ended up flipping Pierce and Garnett. And I think you saw with the Clippers ended up, you know, ultimately, you know, letting Chris, or, you know, trading Chris Paul and then trading Blake Griffin. Like, they were better off that way too. Now, I think L.A. and Boston are, well, Boston not as much, but definitely L.A. is like more of a free agency destination. So like, they kind of could be like, well, in a couple of years we'll get Kawhi and we'll trade for PG. Like, Utah can't say that. So maybe you just keep Donovan Mitchell. Like, that's probably the safest route. But I don't know. I think you have to move one. And I almost look at it like, if you can get a big haul for Donovan, I think it might be worth it.
I do think the Capella and stuff package ends up happening. I think Gobert is the one. I've been saying for months that I was like, I feel like it's just Schlink's gonna be like, hey, Golden State, this price tag's a little insane and we have history. So whichever one of these guys that you're not paying long term and you want to get off, like Poole or Wiggins, whoever it is, he's coming to Atlanta. So just let us know which ones we have to send you, because we're gonna pick off this championship core. Maybe he still does that with one of them. Depends if Poole still wants to be a starter, and if Clay's back, like, they're still just a kind of a block there long term. So I don't know. But I like Gobert in Atlanta would not at all surprise me, but we shall see. We shall see. Jovan, what can the good folks check out from you across theathletic.com this week, the next couple weeks? I know you're on vacation. So what can the good folks look out for?
Yeah, I'll have a free agency big board of the top 25 or 30 guys for the Lakers to spend their taxpayer mid-level exception on.
How sad is this piece?
It's an enthralling list. I think Otto Porter Jr. might be number one, so that's all you got to know. And that might not even be realistic. He might be getting more than that. Probably will be getting more than that. But that I'm going to have some pieces coming out of Malik Monk and Austin Reeves that I think will be good, kind of about Malik's future and Austin kind of improving and stuff and their friendship. So be on the lookout for that. And yeah, I'm going to take the next week or so off. Going to be in Hawaii. Looking forward to that. So also
Hawaii.
Be sure to check out my TikTok.
Your TikTok. I love it. So. Yovan's always up on all this stuff. He keeps up with all that. He's always ahead of the game with the kind of promotions. When's Stargazing season two?
It's in the works.
We're getting that. Yeah.
It will be, yeah, I think August, September. Be on the lookout.
There you go. Stargazing. Yovan Bua. Yovan, thank you so much for taking time out of your vacation to do this. I greatly appreciate it. Always good to catch up, my friend. And we'll talk again soon.
Talk to you soon.
All right, that'll do it for part one here on the Friday, June 17th, 2022 edition here on the Chase Thomas podcast. Thank you again to Yovan of The Athletic for stopping by on part one here on today's show. If you enjoyed Yovan and I on this part of the podcast, make sure that you like and subscribe on YouTube and check us out there. But also, if you enjoyed it and you're listening via Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you hit that pause button and you leave this show a 5-star rating and a review. It helps other people find the show, and it helps other people find the show, which is what I just said, and helps this show continue to grow. That's what we're going with. All that good stuff. Part two coming up in just one second. We got a 3-parter here on today's edition of the Chase Thomas podcast on the Blue Wire Pod Network. So part two coming up in just one second. Thank you for sticking around and making the Chase Thomas podcast part of your daily listen here on the Blue Wire Pod Network. We greatly appreciate it and hope you guys stick around for all of our programming today. All right, Uncle Derek, how'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.